Well, hello, friends. Greg Kokel here on Stand to Reason. We are in like our ninth week of lockdown. I haven't actually counted officially and been doing the countdown during the show, but maybe I should. I don't know. I've just been mostly trying to forget about it. Forget about it when I'm here doing the show with you. And that forget about it reminds me of somebody I know. His name's Frank Turek, and he's on board with us right now. Frank, forget about it.
You want a piece of me? Forget about it.
There is actually a sign in New York City, because when we did CIA last year, was that in New York, right?
That was. It was leaving Brooklyn on the Long Island Expressway. It says leaving Brooklyn, and right under it, it says forget about it.
Yeah, like F-U-G-G-E, yeah. You know, that whatever, that crazy spelling. Hey, good to talk to you. And you know what? My last event was Rethink Dallas. You were there. Is that right?
Yeah, Rethink Dallas was wonderful. I was hoping that you guys were going to do Rethink Birmingham, but that didn't happen.
No, that got pulled, and that was the last of our officially Rethinks. Now they're realities. We have the new name, and we're thrilled with the new name, and it's ours. So nobody's going to beef at us for treading on their project or their language or their trademark or whatever. So we are glad to have Rethink for so many years. And so we made a change. Now it's reality, and we're still looking to reality. And September at Orange County, we're looking at reality. In November in Minneapolis, we're looking at, is that November? Yeah. And reality in October, also in the Seattle area. I think that's the dates right now. And then following spring, Dallas again, and hopefully we'll have a new home for our Southern event. But I want to talk about your event coming up, because that is the next event I have scheduled, August, with Mr. Turek and crowd, you know, and God willing, this one's going to go forward. But obviously, it's our annual CIA enterprise that we have been doing together for years, or actually I've been doing with you, because it's your enterprise, not mine. And you have graciously included me all of these years, along with a whole host of others, J. Warner Wallace, Brett Kunkel, Richard Howe, Bobby Conway, Jorge Gill, David Wood, and Alyssa Childers are both on board now. They were on board last year, and it looks like they're on schedule for us this year. What an unbelievable setup of cast of characters that we have, faculty for that. Most probably who are listening, at least vaguely familiar with CIA. Why don't you tell us in a little more detail?
Yeah, it's the Cross Examine Instructor Academy, and every year, this is going to be our 13th year, I believe.
Oh, my goodness.
That we've been doing this, and what we try and do is we try and teach people how to present the evidence for Christianity in a winsome way, and how to answer questions that they might get in a hostile environment. And so you've been doing that for years, I've been doing that for years, just about everybody on our team has been doing that for years. And so it's not a talking head event where you just sit and listen to a bunch of speakers. You'll get some of that. But then you present to us, and we evaluate you, and we give you two opportunities to present. And that's probably the most valuable part of it, because we don't want just to give you information. We want you to present information back to us in a digestible way, in a compelling way. And so we're going to give you tips on how to improve your presentation skills and question answering skills. And so it's going to be me, you, J. Warner Wallace, Richard Howe, Alyssa Childers, Brett Kunkel, David Wood, Bobby Conway, and Jorge Gill. And we'll also give you tips on how to do better on social media, because we have people on the team, such as Jorge Gill and David Wood and J. Warner Wallace, who are really good at social media. So they're going to help in that regard as well. So it's a fun 3 days. It's a tiring 3 days, but we go pretty much dawn to dusk, as you know, Greg.
Right.
And
right.
We all eat together. We all hang out together. I don't just mean the speakers. I mean all the students as well. And so you get
That's
to
right.
ask questions of people that maybe you've listened to for a while, face to face over a meal. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun. And we've had people, Greg, as you know, who have come back to CIA 5, 6, 7, 8 times.
Mm-hmm.
They find it
yeah.
that valuable.
Yeah, well, they learn something new every time. And then you've had Advanced CIAs, too, which is the place where I first met Alisa Childers, who will soon be published with her own book this fall, which I've read. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but I endorsed
it. Oh, it's
great.
Yeah.
And it's magnificent. It really is a necessary one, another gospel that is helping people navigate the challenges of progressive Christianity. But so there is a huge cadre of experienced people who know the ropes and who have been doing this for a while so that the students can learn from it. And I want to reemphasize something that you've already talked about a little bit, Frank, and that is this isn't just your regular conference. It isn't like you come and sit in a crowd and then you go and have lunch and you take some notes and then you go home and you go to your hotel and that's it. This is a family atmosphere. Actually, even when Frank's given his talk, I get to pitch in whatever I want and others mm-hmm. in the team. So we add to the whole thing. It's a relaxed dynamic. Everybody gets lots of personal attention from the cadre, from the staff proper. The distinctions, you know, we just try to break down those walls so that people will have something different from this. I don't even want to call it a conference or anything like that because it's not. Even the workshop doesn't capture the sense of it from this experience so that they will be more effective communicators, not just one-on-one with people, but also as especially to groups of people, whether it's on a college campus or in your youth group or however, whatever opportunities the Lord gives you. Those are the skills that we want to help groom you in. And we are all committed to that process. And this is what Frank has done so superbly to engineer this enterprise over the last 13 years. It's just amazing. It's 13 years. And I've been with you every time.
Oh, well, the first person I thought of was you, Greg. And that at that point, Tactics wasn't even out. It was like a year before Tactics came out.
That's right, before the book came out.
Yeah, but I remember you had the Tactics teaching, and you also had the STR podcast, which I listen to every week. And this year, it's going to be in Dallas at North Dallas Community Bible Fellowship, which is a wonderful facility, wonderful church, wonderful people. And it's right next to a Hampton Inn. You just walk from the Hampton Inn to the church there. And if you guys are worried
about heat, you got to suffer the heat for about 100 yards.
That's what I was going to say. If you're worried about coronavirus, do not worry about coronavirus because the coronavirus cannot live in Dallas in August. In fact, very few people can live in Dallas in August. So,
its limit is like 120. And so when you're at 130, you're okay. You get a coronavirus bathing in heat from the hotel to the church. So you're covered. It's kind of like it's better than all that slime you put on your hands, man.
That's right.
But I am wondering, though. I just, of course, Texas is a lot more conservative from other states. You know, not much is going to be opened up in August in California from the way things are going. But we're expecting things to be able to go smoothly and to have our group meeting and everything in Dallas on our August dates, just as usual, right?
Right. As far as we know, everything's a go, and we're taking registrations or actually applications through about, I want to say, June 15th, somewhere about there. Mm-hmm. You need to apply. We don't just take anybody. It's not cheap, but it's worth it. In fact, we have people come back 5, 6, 7 times. Even with the tuition price, which is somewhere around, I want to say $700-$800, something like that, it doesn't cover all the costs. I mean, we go in the hole to do this because we believe in it, but we know that people have to contribute to come. We only take between 50 and 60 people. So you're going to be with a small group. And the reason we take that small number of people is because we want to have personal time with you. We want you to present to us. And that means you're going to have one of the instructors on two occasions sit in your session to hear you present so they can give you honest feedback so you can improve yourself. And Greg, you've said this so much before, bloom where you're planted. Why don't you unpack that for us? Because we need people to actually do this where they are. They don't need to travel the country. They just need to do it where they are.
Yeah, this is something I'll talk more about when I say goodbye to you and kind of finish work on my commentary, the comments I have for this show. Looks like we've got a lot of people queued up here, too, to talk with, so I may not get to all of it. But one of the things I wanted to talk about is just what you asked about, Frank, and that is bloom where you're planted. I get so many people, and I'm sure you do, that ask with full hearts and excitement, how can I do what you do kind of thing? And there's not really a career path for it, you know, exactly. But what I tell them is to do what I did. And what I did is I tried to be as faithful as I could with whatever opportunity God had placed before me. You know, I didn't get all introspective about calling and being led and all that. I figured, look, Proverbs says, don't withhold good from the person to whom it's due if you have the opportunity to do it. That's Proverbs 3. So I figured it's smart, it's wise to take the opportunities you have and use them. And that's what I've done. And as time has gone on, taking those opportunities, blooming where I have been planted, so to speak, whatever the circumstance it was that I was in, helped me to be fruitful then. And it also helped me to be a student of my craft, I guess, is another way of putting it, for the future, because every time I did a little bit, I got a little bit better, usually. Not always, but usually. Well, that's how it works. And so consequently, when I think of CIA, I see this as an opportunity for people who have done a few things already. Maybe they've broken out, they're teaching in a Sunday school, they may be giving some talks in their local community in some fashion, but they realize they're falling short on training, on education about the craft. Maybe they know some things about apologetics. We presume most people here are already doing that. And they also have been breaking the ice a little bit in terms of testing the waters on public speaking. But what we're going to do is then we're going to take that and help them go to the next stage. They are doing what they can where they're planted. Here is an opportunity to avail themselves of some training and some input and some practice that they are not going to get. I promise you, they're not going to get it anywhere else. This is absolutely unique what you do, Frank.
Well, I can't do it without you guys. So if people want to be a part of this, they got to go to crossexamine.org, click on events, CIA, and you can apply. And we hope to see you in Dallas. Also, I want to mention that last week, Greg and I did a live stream. We're doing live streams every day at CrossExamine. And we did a live stream on tactics, the new tactics. Those of you who don't have the new tactics need to get it. I'm just saying, hey, Greg, I'm telling you,
my guest is doing a commercial for my book on my own show.
I sell more tactics books than atheist books right now because it's brand new. And I'm always telling people, hey, you guys need, in fact, there's two books you need to absolutely read before you come to CIA. It's I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist and Tactics. Those are the two that we say you have to study and you have to get the arguments down and the tactics down in order to actually be effective in the CIA program and beyond. And the new tactics you have in here are great. That people need to understand those as well.
Sure.
You know, what a friend we have in Jesus, Inside Out, some of the other tactics.
Yeah.
I listen to the podcast every week, Greg. I also listen to STRS with you and Amy. You guys are doing great work
that's
on that,
great.
Too.
Well, so, Amy's been under the weather a bit the last couple of months, and so she's been in and out. I did three shows today with John Noyes, and those will be coming out in the next week or so. And I'm going on vacation in a couple of weeks, so I'm packing in shows to kind of fill in the spaces when I'm gone. But I'm just curious, though, with all of that's been going on. I know you are a busy guy, and under any circumstance, you're going to keep your hand to the plow. But what kind of challenges have the recent developments, the shutdown I mentioned, now we're in almost beginning of the third month, I think.
Yeah.
How has that influenced your own enterprise, your own productivity, that kind of thing, Frank?
Well, actually, we had a pretty strong online presence, as you have. So we have just doubled down on that. As I say, we're doing a Hope One live show every day at 11:30 Eastern for an hour. We have guests on like you, Jay Warner Wallace, John Lennox. Tomorrow I'm having Jay Warner Wallace on. Then I'll have Michael Heiser on and then Sean McDowell on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And for an hour, we discuss an issue. And we talk for about 35, 40 minutes. Then we take questions. Mm-hmm. And we're also doing online courses. So that's what we're trying to do, Greg. We're trying to reach people online while we can. I may have an event in July that's scheduled now. I'm hoping we can get to Summit. I know we're all going to try and teach at Summit virtually, mm-hmm. but I think maybe by midway through the summer we'll be there in person. I sure hope so anyway.
Yeah, I was listening to Colorado Springs.
Yeah, I was listening to your friend, Dennis Prager yesterday,
uh-huh.
and somebody said to Dennis, and Dennis echoed this, he said, you know, He said, this really, this coronavirus, as tragic as it has been, is really more like a nursing home disease.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
Most of the people dying, you know, are elderly with a condition. And the point is, you don't need to shut down the whole country for that kind of problem. And that's unfortunately, that's what we've done. Now, if we knew what we know now 3 months ago, we probably would have done things differently. But I'm really baffled by, I just saw today, as just before the show, I'm baffled by L.A. County saying we're gonna put the at-home order through July. For what? I don't get it. I just don't get it, Greg.
Yeah, it's frustrating and crazy. I'm, for the most part, I have just laid off of my own reflections and rantings on that particular issue here for the show, just to be gracious to people, because everybody's talking about it all the time. You know, and it's like, okay, let's move on to other things. But yeah, it's been frustrating, and it's not just been inconvenient, but what we do not want to have to do is to back off on really important activities that are both of our organizations are involved with, so that we can meet the needs of our team, of our constituents, of our family, our communities, you know, our respective CIA and Standard Recent communities, of which there's a big overlap, I'm convinced. And we want to continue doing that. And so if we get squeezed out for some of the realities coming up in the fall, I mean, that hurts. That hurts people, that hurts us, that hurts the gospel, that hurts everything that we stand for. And this is why we're trying to pray it through and trusting and praying, as I did today with our staff, you know, that God would give wisdom and common sense to those who are making the kinds of decisions that influence our day-to-day life in the states that we live in. And that's where the action's really happening. It's the state sovereignty and individual governors who are calling the shots for most of us right now.
Well, Greg, I was going to say, if you put a Planned Parenthood sign out in front of a Stand to Reason, you could be an essential business, you know.
Yes, right.
I think our mutual friend Jack Hibbs down there in Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills, is about to do that on May 31st.
I heard him yesterday. Yes,
we're opening things up on May 31st because
is Pentecost Sunday, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Well, look, Greg, here's the problem. The left thinks church is like a hobby. It's like going to the theater.
Yeah.
They don't realize it's an essential part of life, and it is a part of life that brings so much good to society. They just don't realize that.
Well, so. I think the maneuver here is that we have a push to get COVID-19 listed as a disability, like AIDS was.
That's right.
So then you can't do anything. You got to just leave it completely alone. Anyway, so enough of that. The fact of the matter is, we live in a godly way, dealing with the issues and the circumstances that God allows to come into our life. And it says in 1 Peter chapter 4, let those who suffer according to the will of God commit themselves to a faithful Creator in doing what is right. Mm-hmm. And so that's our commitment. And part of what is right for us is to continue feeding those who have been entrusted to us to feed.
That's right.
And one huge way that you do that is the CIA conference coming up August 6th through 8th. If you go to crossexamine.org, you can drop the events drop down and take a look at it there, or you just put crossexamine.org/what-is-CIA. Those dashes make it hard, man. Why is that complication?
Just go to crossexamine.org. You'll find it. Look, if you can't find the link, don't come to CIA. That's right. Okay.
Don't
come. Don't apply.
Way to go back to grade school.
That's right.
Frank Turek is obviously the founder of the broader enterprise, and especially this event. I'll be there with him and Richard Howe and J. Warner Wallace and Brett Kunkel, Bobby Conway, Jorge Gill, David Wood. Mm-hmm. And Alisa Childers will be there. So what a fabulous time that's going to be. Limited enrollment, and you have to apply. You don't just register. You have to apply and get accepted. And you could do that at crossexamined.org. What a great opportunity to chat with you a little bit. Hey, you know what? Since I'm doing this from home on my computer, I can see your ugly face.
Yeah.
I know. You can see mine.
Well, take your glasses off, Greg. The view gets better.
The difference is you shaved sometime in the last couple of days. I haven't. So.
I do a live stream every day. I'm in front of the computer. I got to shave, man. I just haven't gotten a haircut in 3 months. So,
well, you know, here's the deal, though. If you get a haircut, you're sitting there while she cuts you and you're looking in the mirror. So you know what she does. And so what I did, at least to the front stuff, so what I did is I stood in a mirror in front of the mirror and I did what she did.
Uh-huh.
And I was able to turn the
stuff. It looks like it, Greg.
And so I gave myself half a haircut. My wife helped with a little bit in the back, but I gave myself the front haircut, and it was good enough, for government work. Let's put it that way.
All right, good.
So anyway, just a tip, passing it on, the things that we learn. Necessity is the mother of invention.
That's
Frank,
right,
what a treat to talk to you, and I really look forward to seeing you. Obviously, any time, but I think our next shot is going to be August 6th through 8th in Dallas at North Dallas Community Bible Fellowship in Plano, Texas. And folks, check it out, crossexamined.org. It is a fabulous experience. Thank
Amen,
you, Frank.
Brother. Great being with you. Hi to Amy and Derek and everybody there. You guys are doing great work. Keep it going.
Well, they're all listening to you because they're in the background of this program, too. Okay, let's take a break, and we'll come back to your questions at Stand to Reason right after this.
We have some really exciting news. We have a new name for our student apologetics conferences. At Stand to Reason, we talk a lot about reality. As a result, we're in the habit of saying Christianity is the best explanation of the way things are. That is, Christianity matches up with the way the world really is, with reality. It makes sense of the origin and design of the universe and life, the existence of objective truth and morality, the purpose, meaning, and value of human experience, the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus, and the existential longing of every human heart. In other words, we have reality on our side. That's why we've decided to call our events, drumroll please, STR's Reality Conference. Unfortunately, many students are under the impression that Christianity is make-believe for grown-ups. At our apologetic student conferences, we're pushing back by using our greatest ally, reality. Christianity isn't a made-up story divorced from reality. It is the true story of reality. So join us at one of our two-day reality conferences in California, Washington, Minnesota, or Texas. Discover why we believe Christianity is the best explanation of the way things are by visiting realityapologetics.com and registering today.
Did you know Stand to Reason has a YouTube channel? We release a new video each Monday on the topics you care about. Through short, engaging videos, our speakers train you on tactics, offer apologetics tips, answer common theology questions, and address big issues in the world today. Join tens of thousands of other subscribers so you can stay up to date when we release a new video. Just go to youtube.com and search STR videos, all one word, and hit the subscribe button. That's STR videos. Take advantage of this free resource to help you stay informed, encouraged, and equipped as you share your worldview with others.
Here on Stand to Reason, Greg Kokel, your host. Always fun to talk to Frank Turek. Doing great work, and looks like he's doing live stream stuff every single day. I did not, unfortunately, get the details of that. And I think if you just go to crossexamined.org, you'll find out what he's doing and when he's doing it, and you can watch it yourself. It's a lot of fun. And he's got some great talent that he interviews there. Interesting, and will really help strengthen your own convictions. Speaking of special kind of video things now, we've ventured into a little bit of a new area that's been a lot of fun. It's actually an idea of Mr. B, that would be Tim Barnett. And he's doing a thing called Red Pen Logic. Some of you don't know that he used to be a teacher. And so he's quick with the red pen to mark up papers when he sees error. And what he's been doing is going to atheist websites or Twitter to see Twitter representations or characterizations or Facebook characterizations of arguments against Christianity. And then he goes and he, in a very friendly twinkle, twinkle, nudge, nudge, grin, grin kind of way, takes them to task for their errors and uses his bread pan to mark them up and show what went wrong, largely as a tutorial so that Christians can become more effective thinkers about the things that really matter. So check out the new video series. It's simply called Red Pen Logic, and with Mr. B, and he picks apart bad ideas in a fun and engaging way. It's a YouTube channel, actually, Red Pen Logic, or you can just go to str.org and you can find it there. All right, with that in mind, let's head to the phones, and we have Mark in Wisconsin, my favorite state. Hi, Mark, how you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Do I know you, Mark?
You do not.
Oh, okay. Because I have some Mark friends up there in northern Wisconsin, but I'm just checking. So, where in Wisconsin are you from, Mark?
Up by Webster.
Outside of Webster?
Webster,
where is that?
Yes.
General location, general area.
That would be a couple of hours to the northeast of St. Paul, Minnesota.
To the northeast. Okay, I got you. All right. Well, that's up in, that's kind of, that's the North Woods country, if it's northeast. That Hayward area?
Yes, that. Yeah,
yeah. I love that area. I got caught one of my largest smallmouth bass there in Hayward. Actually, I got 2 5s on one day in Round Lake. So that was something great. So that can't be too far from where you're talking about. So how can I help you today, Mark?
Well, I'm not really sure how to put it. It's not really a question that I don't know if you can really answer, but I kind of wanted to bring it up so that your listeners are aware of this thing. I'll just tell you what my experience was briefly. It has to do with trying to decipher if new developments in the medical field, particularly the natural medicine, if you're dealing with sorcery or witchcraft or not, mm-hmm. because of the way doctors present it. Mm-hmm. My experience is that I've been going to a chiropractor, the same guy, for probably 15 or 20 years. Uh-huh. And know that he takes in addition to his chiropractic adjustments, you can also do this nutrition testing. And this testing has to do with energy fields and things like that, which seems like hocus pocus to me.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I didn't, really give that a whole lot of credit. I mostly went there just for chiropractic adjustments. But
sure.
Anyway, recently they've been shut down because of everything that's going on. And I recently, since they opened back up, I set an appointment to go get an adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
When I arrived, they said that I had to stand outside the building on the sidewalk.
Okay.
And while standing on the sidewalk, the doctor was on the inside of the building, and so there's a glass door between the two of us, and he's standing there pointing at me, and he has a glass vial in his other hand.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of moments of him, moving his arms around, he steps out, and he tells me that I'm not allowed to come into the building because I just tested positive for the coronavirus.
Sorry, I'm laughing, but it's just so crazy. And the test that he used behind glass doors inside the building while you were outside the building is what exactly? I'm just curious.
His explanation was that he is using quantum mechanics, in particularly something called quantum entanglement, to determine if I tested positive or not. And okay. This vial that he had contained coronavirus energy.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
All right. I mean, it's hard to listen to this and keep a straight face. I mean, first of all, I know that when you come... when you come to the quantum world, for example, there's almost nobody who really knows for sure what's going on there. And this is kind of well known among scientists. This was a while back, but one of the famous workers there said, if you meet anybody who says they understand the quantum world, you know, they're just not telling the truth. Now, of course, time passes and they learn more and whatever, but there are lots of variables there. And the quantum world is the subatomic world. It is what happens at the level below atoms. Okay. And to say that there is such a thing called coronavirus energy, that certainly isn't quantum mechanics stuff, because energy that he's talking about, if it's quantum, I mean, this is my suspicion. I don't traffic in all of this because I just don't. I only have, pardon me for putting it this way, but I only have time for so much nonsense. And this seems to me to be just forget about this. This is nutty. And when I think about it, to think that, okay, that there is an energy that pertains precisely to the virus itself. So the energy has an identity of sorts connected with the virus. So you could have a bottle of, I mean, could you get a bottle of cocal energy? Could you have a bottle of cocal energy?
Sure.
Actually, if you had one of those, I'd like to.
Right.
I want it back because I need it. So I don't mean to just simply ridicule and dismiss. I'm trying to point out that this seems to be bizarre and unbelievable on its face, okay? And further, that the virus energy that he allegedly had inside the building has the ability to perceive the virus energy somewhere on the outside of the building, inside of an individual, and react in such a way that the doctor in this case will know that it's reacting in the presence of more coronavirus energy. Do you see how crazy this is? Okay, so maybe in 50 years we'll find out that he was onto something. But at the moment, I don't think you have any reason to believe that it's true, and it's too much like occultic things, as far as I'm concerned, to mess with.
Right, and that's kind of why, you know, I'm asking is, like, you know, where do we draw the line when it comes to things that seem like hocus pocus?
Yeah.
And science, because, you know, if you had a smartphone in your hand 200 years ago and were talking to somebody on the opposite side of the planet in real time, somebody would accuse you of practicing sports.
Of course. Of course. Whenever that was, you said 200 years ago, if somebody said they'll be able to do that, you would be justified in doubting it based on the available evidence. Okay. And so it turns out there are a lot of things that are unusual turn out to be true, but you are not justified in believing they will turn out to be true at the time they're mentioned. And a whole bunch of things don't turn out to be true, you know, like bleeding patients so that they get better, and using leeches on them and all kinds of other stuff, you know. So I'm talking about medieval kind of medicine, all right? So, and whenever somebody tries to explain or justify or verify something they're doing by an appeal to quantum mechanics, to me that is already, unless it's a physicist who operates deeply in that field, and he's talking about physics and physics alone, then I am suspicious. Deepak Chopra does this all the time. And he develops all this kind of spiritual mumbo jumbo, and then he talks about, oh, this is the quantum field, etc., and the way quantum physics relates to the consciousness, etc. And it's almost as if all he has to do is mention those words and people just lie down and say, you must know what you're talking about. I think that's one of those words that is meant to – go ahead.
Yeah, because you can't disprove it, so you can say whatever.
Yeah, it's almost like you're blinding people with science. Oh, I don't know what he's talking about, so he must know what he's talking about. I personally would not go to this this particular practitioner. I actually have a friend who's written a book called New Age Medicine, and I'm just wondering if it's still in print. This friend is actually a guy I've known since he was in med school when I was first a Christian, and he hold on just a minute. I'm just checking here on. I don't usually do this kind of thing. His name is Paul Reiser, and he co-wrote. He co-wrote the book with John Weldon, and John Weldon was a roommate of mine during the Jesus Movement many, many, many years ago. John Weldon has since gone to be with the Lord, but I see one of his books here with John Ankerberg, Can You Trust Your Doctor? The Complete Guide to New Age Medicine and Its Threat to Your Family. So the one that he wrote with my doctor, Paul Reiser, who does the health books for folks in the family, that apparently I don't see it here, and I'm not going to spend time kind of going through the list, but you might just check it out and see if that's available. And it's dated; it's a while back, so I don't know how much new stuff it'll have. And even John Weldon's been gone for a few years now, but that would be a place to start to try to get some more information about this. As a general rule, when people get into this kind of stuff, I just go away. I said, exit stage left, because it isn't worth the trouble, especially if you're being right. charged for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Does that help?
It does. Thank you.
All right. I appreciate the call, Mark. And boy, that stuff really, oh man, you hear it and you think, what next? Lordy, lordy, lordy. Now, the next call has to do with the moral law, and that's going to take a little bit of talking. So I'm looking at my clock here. We're close to break. Let's take that break, and then I'll come back to Joe in Kansas and talk about, does the existence of moral law necessitate a moral lawgiver? Short answer, yes. And I'll explain why when we come back on Stand to Reason.
Some people treat Christianity like it's a build-your-own Sunday shop. They include the bits they like and exclude the bits they don't. The problem is, truth is not ice cream. You can't build your own biblical reality like you build an ice cream sundae. You can't pick and choose the parts you prefer. Truth doesn't work like that. Truth is what matches up with reality. Sadly, there are some who are creating a version of Christianity that fits their own subjective desire rather than sound doctrine. At this year's STR Reality Conferences, you will get the tools to identify counterfeit versions of Christianity so you can guard against them. We want to show you that biblical reality isn't something we shape. Rather, it's something that shapes us. So join us at one of this year's STR Reality Conferences. Discover why truth is not ice cream by visiting realityapologetics.com and registering today.
You know, if you've gained anything from listening to Stand to Reason, I'd really be thrilled to hear it from you. I love to take your questions, of course, but I also want your feedback. So here's what you can do. Head over to iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a rating and a review. That kind of thing really helps us to get the word out so more ambassadors for Christ can find the show and become equipped to stand confidently. And you never know, I might just give you a shout out on the air to show you my appreciation for your positive review. I value you as a faithful listener. I look forward to reading what you think about the show. Thanks. I don't see FX visual, so I just have to intuit through quantum mechanics, whether he's pointing at me or not here. Let me know. My mic is hot. And so far, I've been I'm 2 for 2. All right. Good for that. Let's see. Just a reminder, we are doing STR Ask. That would be hashtag STR Ask every week. We're doing multiple shows. Even though my standard co-host is out of play a bit, and she's in sometimes, she's out sometimes, and just did a couple of them this morning, 3 of them actually, with Jonathan Noyes, who is my co-host, and then later this week I'll do one with Amy. So these are coming up on a regular basis, but they only work because you take a question you have and you append hashtag STR Ask to it, and you keep the letters underneath the standard Twitter amount and put it in a Twitter, and we will find it because it has that hashtag. And John, just the other day, finally made clear to me what the heck the hashtag is and how it works. I mean, I know what it is. I just didn't know how it worked in the digital world, so I have a pretty clear idea of that right now. So we need your questions. To put it simply, if you don't send questions, we don't answer questions. If you have a question that you'd like to ask me or Amy or John or any of the others, or have us some part of the team respond to, then position it in Twitter with the hashtag STRask somewhere in your piece, and that would be no spaces in that. And we'll get it, and then we'll do our best to respond to it. And this is especially good for people who have questions but can't take the time to sit in the queue and listen and wait for me to get to them. And that's what Joe in Kansas has been doing for 45 minutes now. So let's put you on, Joe, and let you have your shot. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you for your time this evening and for your work in the Master's Vineyard.
Well, you're so
welcome. I have a question for you. You already read it. The question is, does the existence of moral law necessitate the existence of a moral lawgiver?
Yeah.
And if I can elaborate a little bit.
Sure.
So I guess my question is, if someone agrees that, yes, they're, you know, an action can be judged as objectively morally wrong or morally right, now why does that necessitate, not just indicate, but necessitate the existence of a moral lawgiver?
Okay.
And another question is, why would that be a Columbo 3 question?
Well, all the Columbo 3 does is it's a way of using questions to maneuver to the particular point you're trying to make, and how one would validate the point that a moral law requires a moral lawgiver. Now, I'm just thinking how there's a lot of different directions I could go here, and I'm not sure if this is your own question or you're offering the question because somebody else has pressed you on it. Either way is fine with me. But part of what I'd want to say is, so you're asking me, just so I'm clear, whether a law requires a lawgiver. Now, I'm just pausing for a moment because I want to clarify what I mean by a law here. In this case, it's a moral law. Actually, that's the way you put it. Does a moral law require a moral lawgiver? We use law language in a number of ways. One way we use is to describe the natural world and the way the natural world works. And we say that there are laws of motion and laws of gravity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there's some question as to what's actually going on in those cases. And many who are trying to be as precise as possible will say, well, when we say law, we don't mean that there is some kind of force governing the world, but rather we are identifying regularities that seem to always hold. And the reason they say that is because they don't want to they don't want to imply that there are these invisible forces that drive things, you know, because they're materialists and there's no room in their worldview for that. And so that's the way the word law is often used, as just to describe regularities. So we have the law of gravity, and all that means, all we're saying is not that the world is obliged to obey something, but rather that it actually follows this pattern. And so we call that, that's kind of like the law of, you know, peanut butter and jelly, you know, toast, you know, you drop it and it always lands peanut butter jelly side down or whatever, you know, that kind of deal. Well, that's not
hard and fast law.
Okay. Yes. But now what we're talking about, though, is something different. When we talk about moral law, we are not talking about the way things happen. We are talking about the way things are supposed to happen, but they don't always happen that way. And that is because these kinds of laws apply to rational beings who have the ability to choose to do them or not. Okay? So these kinds of laws are more like speed limit type laws, just to use an analogy. And I'm pointing out the distinction here because when we zero in on exactly the kind of law we're talking about, we realize that different rules apply to how we understand this kind of law than when we're talking about the law of gravity, the laws of motion, or something like that. Okay? Those are descriptive. They are summaries that describe how the world actually does operate. These moral laws are prescriptive. They don't describe the way things happen. They prescribe the way they're supposed to happen. So they are, and this is a real important point here, Joe, yeah, I'm looking at flashing buttons here up on the screen, and I want to make sure I'm choosing. Yeah, Joe in Kansas. This is really important because it dictates, when you realize what we're talking about, it informs us as to the nature of it and the character of it. So when we talk about moral laws, we're talking about things that people are obliged to do but may not do it. Now, notice that word I used a few moments ago. They're obliged to do it. Now, obligation is the essential characteristic of moral law. If there is no obligation associated with the claim, then there's no moral law. So if I say there's a moral law, against speeding. I'll just use that. There's a moral law against speeding, but I'm not saying you're supposed to not speed. I'm not saying you're obliged to keep within the speed limit, but there is a moral law against speeding. And you would say, well, if you're not obliged to keep it, I don't even know what you mean when you say there's a moral law against speeding or a moral law that requires us to drive within the speed limit. Because if we're required to, that means we're obliged to. And if we are not obliged or required, then in what sense is it a moral law? So does that make sense so far to you?
Yes, very much. Yo, so.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. So in summary so far, is the essential nature of moral law is obligation. But when there's a moral law which entails of necessity obligation, or it's not a moral law, then the question can be asked, to whom or what are we obliged? And when we think about it for a few moments, we realize, well, there is no what that we're obliged to, because we aren't obliged to things. I'm not obliged to the pen sitting here, or to my F-150 sitting in my driveway, or my house, or this computer, or any physical thing. The physical things by themselves create no obligation upon me. The only one that creates obligation on me are around here, my wife and my kids, right? Persons.
Absolutely.
Obligations are held between persons. That's the nature of an obligation. And somebody may say, well, prove that one for me. And I say, well, you're not listening to me, because what I'm doing is I'm reflecting on the thing by looking carefully at it. In a certain sense, mentally looking carefully at the concept, and when we look carefully at it, we discover things about it. It's just that how do you know that a square has six sides? Well, here's one. Look at it. Don't you see the six sides? That's how I know. I'm seeing it. And in the same sense, we are doing something similar with concepts and ideas. We are reflecting on things we know something about, and we're looking at different facets of it and determining something about the nature of it. And then that tells us, at least in principle, something about its origin. So if we have a moral law, and when we think about moral laws, that we ought to do this and we ought to do that, well, that ought is an ought before someone, not before something. Here's my coffee mug. Oh, man, I better obey it. I better do what my coffee mug expects me to do. Really? Come on, it's a joke. But when it's a person, especially if that person is in the appropriate position of authority to make demands that are, in fact, incumbent upon us to obey, well, then we have an obligation that is a moral obligation. All right? So then the question is, if there is real morality, and this is the presumption of your question was that there is, if there is, does the existence of moral law, so that presumes moral law exists. Some people don't agree with that, and there's a different procedure to go about. And but it has my approach has to do with the problem of evil. I think everybody knows that objective moral law exists. But given that it does exist, where does it come from? To whom or what are we obliged? There's a question. So if I were to use like a Columbo 3 sequence, I would say, so you agree that there is objective moral laws? Yes. So these are obligations that stand outside of our approval of them. In other words, even if we didn't think we were obliged in this way, given that they're objective, then we would still be obliged. Yeah, I do. So, okay, so then you agree too that the moral law creates an obligation. Right. Okay, to whom are we obliged in the moral laws that we experience? Then I'm waiting for them to, well, nobody. Well, then how is it an obligation? Well, it's not an obligation. Okay, well, then how is it a moral law? Well, maybe it's not a moral law. Okay, well, then that's the end of your discussion. If you say there is no moral law, then we don't need a moral law maker. But if there is one, then we do need a moral law maker that is someone that is responsible, has authority over us. And if they say there is no moral law, I got another line of questions for you. Okay, go ahead, Joe.
Could we not reply to that we are morally obliged to our fellow man and not to the moral lawgiver?
Well, you could say that, but now which fellow man are we talking about here? Or are we just talking about an amorphous group? And
I guess I don't know.
Pardon me?
I don't know the answer to that. I would say that,
yeah.
You know, if you're supposed to love your neighbors yourself, then you are obliged to love your neighbors yourself.
Sure. Okay. But here's the deal. Let me just jump in here. Let's work with that, because there's an assumption. We are obliged regarding our fellow man. And in that sense, I could be obliged regarding things, you know. But who is it that imposes the obligation on me? This is what who am I obliged to? That's the sense I mean it. So who says I'm obliged to my fellow man? Oh, the fellow man? Well, why should I? What puts my fellow man in a position to make an obligation on me? We're the same. They're not above me. We're just organisms. So how can they say that I ought to obey them? And I realize the reason you asked the question is because there was some ambiguity in the way I asked it. It was my fault. Okay. So to whom are we obliged? And what you said is our fellow man. And the moral law in question may have our fellow human beings as the objects of our goodwill that we are obliged by some other source to give to them. And so I am obliged to you on the street to drive on the proper side of the road so I don't crunch you, okay? But you don't make that obligation to me. You don't impose that on me. It is an obligation imposed by the state, who decides what side of the road we ride on, in order that I then am treating you in a way that's safe for you. So in a certain sense, I'm obliged to you to drive properly, but the obligation proper is coming from an authority, and that's the state. So my question is then, who is the one who's making the laws that we are obliged to obey, even when those obligations are expressed towards each other? That's the question that needs to be answered. And I don't think you're going to find an answer apart from a person that transcends human humanity, because no human is big enough. I remember I was in Singapore or something like that many, many years ago. And I was laying over for a day because of flights, and I took a walk in the park, and then I started talking to a guy who was kind of a hip guy that was on his way to India to live in an ashram. And so we were having this kind of conversation. And so I asked him, to whom or what are we obliged then by the moral laws that exist? I mean, he's moving right along in the conversation. And here's what he said. Now, you think about this. He said, I'm obliged to myself. And then he paused and he thought about it and he goes, no, not big enough. Not big enough is what he said. Isn't that great? He realized that he was not a sufficient integration point for morality. He's just a guy, and I'm a guy, and you're a guy, and we're all people. And so, therefore, no human being individually is a sufficient integration point for universal morality. It's got to be someone bigger. And that just brings us right back to the main point about the existence of moral law necessitates a moral law giver. And I mean, that's just, to me, that statement is straight up common sense. And I don't know why anybody would really disagree with that. If I tell somebody that they can't walk in their own backyard, and they say, why can't I do that? Because it's against the law. He's going to say, what law? And who made it? Because people understand that only laws made by appropriate authorities create obligation. Okay. And even laws made by the appropriate authority, if they're not done, you know, there may be other circumstances where the state passes laws and they're still not legitimate, even though they're a proper authority, because they're unjust laws. So that just shows that human authority is obliged to a higher authority. But there has to be a person that's involved in the process, or else law of that sort, moral law, is simply not law. That's why I think the moral argument is such a good one. I don't think it could be sidestepped easily. The moral argument for the existence of God. If there is objective morality, then there must be a God. If there is no God, there's no objective morality. But there is objective morality because of the problem of evil, for one. Therefore, there must be a God. All righty.
Well, thank you very much for your time, sir. I sincerely appreciate it.
Okay, Joe.
I believe I understand your answer.
Okay, super. Perfect timing. There's our music. So just right, Joe. God bless you, brother. Thank you for the call. And that's it for the show. Boy, I enjoyed it. Went fast. Go out and give them heaven this week. Okay, friends? Greg Kokel here for Stand to Reason.